The Extraordinary Ordinary is brought to you in partnership with Coca-Cola Euro-Pacific Partners. Hello and welcome to The Extraordinary Ordinary, the podcast from Women of the Year. It's a particularly extraordinary year for us at Women of the Year because it's our 70th anniversary. So in celebration, we're doing something a bit different in this series of the podcast. Every woman who's invited to the Women of the Year lunch is extraordinary in some way. And we've been lucky enough to talk to some of them in the previous three series of The Extraordinary Ordinary. But back in 2000, it was decided to give awards to a small number of standout women at each lunch in recognition of their exceptional achievements, courage, and or legacy, or indeed all three. Since then, we've honoured over 100 amazing women, including Tina Turner, Margaret Thatcher, P.D. James, and Marie Colvin. But it hasn't just been about the famous names. We've also given awards to many extraordinary, ordinary women who've shown remarkable determination, bravery, tenacity, and courage, often in the most difficult and dangerous of situations. I'm Diane Kenwood, journalist, broadcaster, and a director of Women of the Year. And in this anniversary series, I'll be talking to some of those amazing past award winners to share why they were honoured, what it meant to them at the time, and to find out how life has been for them since becoming a Woman of the Year award winner. Many of our winners have said that it felt like a dream being given their Woman of the Year award. None, though, have been chosen to be the recipient because of a dream. And yet that's how Nina Barra, the winner of our 2008 Outstanding Achievement Award, says she came up with the idea of launching the first Moonwalk, a nighttime marathon walk around the streets of London to raise money for Breakthrough Breast Cancer. As if walking through the night wasn't enough, participants took part wearing their often highly decorated bras, very much on show. Since then, the moonwalks have happened annually, not just in London, but in other places around the UK and the world. And Walk the Walk, the charity Nina founded when it all began, has raised over £143 million to support work done for and with breast cancer patients and research into the disease, whilst Nina has been awarded a CBE in recognition of her services to healthcare. Nina, welcome to The Extraordinary Ordinary.
Well, thank you for inviting me. It's very, very special to be here.
It's lovely to be able to renew our acquaintance with you from 2008. We have a lot to talk about what's happened in the meantime. But can we just go back to that very early dream of yours, which certainly sounds like an unusual way to come up with something that's become since then an iconic fundraising event. Talk us through that dream, would you?
It makes me smile to think that almost 30 years later, people are still intrigued by how Walk started. I woke up one morning with this dream that I was power walking the New York City Marathon in a bra to raise money for breast cancer. I didn't know anyone with breast cancer. I'd never done any fundraising. I certainly had never wanted to do a marathon. And I think the thing most of all was that at that time, nobody talked about cancer. So it wasn't as if it was something like now where people sit and talk in the pub or, you know, it wasn't mentioned, it was the C word. And if I'm really, really honest, the thing that inspired me was the weekend in New York, because I thought that sounded like great fun. The rest of it was sort of like, oh, okay, well.
Yeah, but you know, Nina, you could have just gone to New York. You didn't need to do a marathon to do that.
Well, you're right. You're right. And do you know, since that very day, I have now done the New York Marathon 25 times. It was the start of my career on the New York Marathon route. It was amazing how it all happened. In my dream, I visualized that there were loads of people going with me. And maybe looking back now, I was visualizing the moonwalk. I don't know. But I ended up with three hardy souls that, like me, all fancied a weekend in New York. And this was sort of like the most bizarre way of spending it. And even to this day, being in New York on marathon weekend is like no other.
And just to be clear, did you do that original New York marathon in your bras?
Yes.
Right. As you do. I mean, if you never run a marathon, and of course you take part in your first one in your bra, I mean, that obviously, why wouldn't you?
Naivety is bliss, right? And what was funny on the morning was that, you know, we were there with all these sort of ardent marathon runners, And, you know, whilst they were all sort of rubbing their Algex in, we were putting the lipstick on, you know, and we had a big banner. We all worked in the media. I worked as a stylist at that time. And everyone that took part, you know, there were photographers and makeup artists and models and, you know, designers. And we all got our clients to donate £500 and we put their logo on a banner. And we had this huge banner. It took two people to hold it. And we held it for 10 minutes each for 26 miles.
Oh, blimey.
But we raised £25,000, which at the time, you know, it felt like 25 million. It was unbelievable. You know, as I was saying, nobody talked about cancer. It was very much a death sentence, really. And so for all of a sudden, these very brazen women, and I mean, it was hugely, hugely controversial. You know, a lot of people thought maybe that it was offensive to women that had breast cancer, that you had sort of women coming out and wearing bras. And I think they also thought, you know, it was going to be, you know, a group of blonde bombshells. And of course we weren't. We were just normal women, probably all a little bit crazy and all kind of thinking, well, this is absolutely outrageous, but let's go and do it, which is what drives women still to do it, I think.
But how did that initial weekend in New York translate, become the moonwalk?
Well, that was supposed to be a one-off event. That was it. It was a one-off fundraising event and there was no intention to go further. And that was November 96. I started to get people ringing me up saying, can I join your next event? And I used to giggle. You know, I mean, at one time I have a diary entry that says, this walking thing is getting huge and I have 11 people. Well, when you think that 500,000 people have now walked the walk.
From little seeds do mighty oaks grow.
Absolutely. And this is why I always say to people, you know, like dreams are like little bubbles and you should hold on to them for a while before they float away. In the January of 97, which was only about 6 weeks after we'd done this, I suddenly found this lump when I was in the shower, which I would never have thought was anything. It was tiny, like a little pine nut, and immediately sprang into action. I was in Arizona on a photo shoot of all places, and I thought, I have to have this seen to while I'm here. You know, while I was there, I had mammograms and different tests, and it turned out to be an aggressive tumor that I'd probably had for about 3 years.
The irony of a situation like that is just extraordinary, isn't it? I mean, the idea comes to you in a dream. You raise money for a cause that you've had no association with whatsoever. And then you yourself become somebody who is now having to deal with the very disease that you are raising money for.
Yeah. And I think I absolutely would never have found my own cancer. You know, I was Mrs. Health. I ate organic food. I went to the gym. And I think people looked at me and thought, wow, if she can get it, anyone can. And certainly the people that knew me all of a sudden didn't know what to do. And of course, doing another walk was the obvious way. And we got together and we decided to do the London Marathon. And so my little band of 13 people that went to New York was suddenly about 25, I think, on the first London Marathon. And then from that, I think I did the marathon. And then later that week, I went into surgery and had a mastectomy and went into all my treatment. And, you know, everybody was around me and I had amazing support. And they said, come on, let's do New York again, because by that time you'll be feeling much better. We said, okay, well, let's. And I think by the time we went to New York, we had probably about 40 people that all went off to New York and caused an absolute riot because we were all in their bras and the New Yorkers all called us the Victoria's Secret girls, you know, and or the bikini girls, and they were waiting for us on the street. And it was really from that we then got an even larger crowd to do the next London Marathon. And it was at that point where we couldn't get all the places that we wanted. 25 people that managed to get places, and 25 that didn't, but they'd raised lots of money. And I remember ringing up the marathon office saying, please, you know, let us in, they're trained and we'll be at the back of the field, we won't be any trouble. And they said, no.
Just to be clear, all of these marathons, you walked them, you didn't run them.
No, we always walk. Yep. I was not built for running. I absolutely do not run. I'm a very fast walker and I can overtake runners walking, but no.
I'm sure you would overtake me if I was attempting to run.
You know, and we spoke to them and they said, no, you can't. And just in about a nanosecond, I said, well, in that case, I'm going to have my own marathon. And they said, well, you can't hold it on the London Marathon route. And I said, I don't want to. I'll hold it on my own route. I put the phone down and I turned around to the person next to me and said, we're going to have a moonwalk. We'll start at midnight, like a relay. And the people that are walking through the night will hand over the baton to the ones that are going to do the marathon in the day. And that is how the moonwalk started.
So it literally, with no planning, you didn't sit down and have a brainstorm and a good old think about it. It just, like the whole idea for doing the marathon in the first place, it literally just popped into your head.
I think that's probably the theme of everything we do at Walk the Walk. It's very spontaneous, but that's what makes it so amazing. It, you know, we're continually changing. But yes, it was literally, I have pondered over buying a pair of shoes longer than I spent thinking about doing the moonwalk.
So you decide to do this event, and I mean, let's skip over the amount of organization it must have taken, because you know, you can't just stroll off down the streets of London willy-nilly. I mean, I'm assuming there's a lot involved in making an event like that happen. And you started with your 50 people for the first one?
Well, actually, for the moonwalk itself, we had the 50 people, 25 of them were doing the marathon, 25 were going to do the moonwalk. With another friend, we did both of them. We did them two back to back. By the time we got to the night, we were sitting having a pasta party and people were coming up to me saying, oh, can I come and join you? And I said, yeah, sure you can. And people were sort of like looking in their bags to see if they had trainers. And, you know, really, when you think about sort of training, preparation, completely opposite. And we ended up with about 60 people.
Did you know from that first one that you had the seed of something really special?
I thought it was special, but I can tell you it was probably into year four where I sort of thought, I think I ought to have more of a plan about this. It was happening very spontaneously. And then, of course, I spent a year going through treatment. I always say I don't know whether I supported Walk the Walk or it supported me, but it gave me such a focus at one of the darkest times in my life.
And how quickly did it become your proper job? How quickly did it take over your life and become the focus?
Really, right from the start, because initially there was just me on my lounge carpet. And then I wasn't earning any money. And I think that my friends were all sort of supporting me. And I think it got to the stage at the end of my treatment where they were saying, well, look, you know, what you've done is amazing. But you can't go on like this, because I didn't even have the money to put stamps on letters. I mean, at that time, you did put stamps on letters. You have to remember that there was no Google, there was no social media, there was nothing. Everything was done by post. And I think that it was the growing concern that this thing was growing, and either I had to sort of make it official, or I had to really say, well, what we've done is fantastic. Now let me move on to something else. And I remember sending out a business proposal to different companies saying, would you support me? I want to start this charity. I had no idea what I was doing, although I'd run my own business before. So I obviously had a business acumen, but not within the charity world.
Let's fast forward to today, because Walk the Walk and the moonwalks themselves have grown into something much bigger. I mean, we know that they happen annually. We know that tens of thousands of people have taken part, and not just women, we should say, should we? Men also take part as well. But Walk the Walk and what you've wanted to do with it has grown not only in terms of the walks themselves and other events, but also in terms of what you support through the money that you raise, because initially it was just for breast cancer, for breakthrough breast cancer, I think was the first one, wasn't it? But now my understanding is that all the money you raise, you allocate it, you basically give grants from the money you raise to organisations, and that can be organisations that support people who have breast cancer, but also organisations that are doing research into breast cancer.
Where we are now is that we put the money where we feel it will achieve the most. It's obviously changed over the years, and COVID has had an enormous impact on us, sadly. And it's the tail of it has been whipping strong, and we are recovering, but it is very slow. We've invested in projects that we run ourselves. We've invested in research, some groundbreaking research that has had a huge impact on the way that people are diagnosed, treated, and actually go through their recovery on their cancer journey. And we've been really quite prolific in supporting integrated care. When I had my own cancer back in 96, I was looking for that integrated care, and it really didn't exist. And it was only places like the Bristol Cancer Help Centre, which at that time was thought to be really off the wall, you know, quite off to the left and odd what they were doing. You know, it wasn't mainstream at all. And I went there myself because all of a sudden I was finding the support that I knew I needed. I needed somebody to just to share the story with, just to be able to talk to, that wasn't involved on the medical side of it. And certainly in 2000, we'd been raising money for Breakthrough. And I decided it was really important that we split the funds. And I really wanted to give half of our funding to the Bristol Cancer Help Centre, which is now Penny Bron UK. And I sort of feel like Walk the Walk has had quite a profound impact on integrated care, because there was nobody doing that. And suddenly we split our funds and people went with it. They trusted us. And look, now you go into a hospital and you find all of the sort of integrated care that you need, acupuncture, counselling, massage, whatever it is that works for you. And it's now become commonplace. And the demand for it is absolutely going through the roof, not only during the period of having cancer, but before treatment and also post-treatment. So, you know, I'm incredibly proud of that. I suppose Walk the Walk has really stuck its head above the parapet. And we've followed and supported things which either wouldn't get funding or wouldn't happen quickly enough because they doesn't have enough funds, or something we absolutely believed in and we've taken the gamble and sort of backed it. I think that's what I loved so much about the organisation, is that we haven't been afraid to take that risk. Unfortunately, touch wood as I touch my head, in most cases, it's absolutely been the right thing to do.
And you now also have many more events than just the moonwalks themselves, because they go on in other countries as well, don't they?
We have our sort of key moonwalks, which have become our flagships. And of course, when that started, it was the first of the challenge events. There was nothing else that people could join. And, you know, people had to enter by post. And we used to get things like 80,000 entrants for just sort of 13,000 places.
What you've achieved, Nina, is so remarkable and so just extraordinary to all of us. And talking about being extraordinary, let's take you back then to that lunch in 2008 when you received your Women of the Year Outstanding Achievement Award. How did that feel to you? What did it mean to you at the time?
Overwhelmed, because I think that, like everybody, you're always looking forward. And, you know, sometimes I think it's really important to stop and look back. But I'm usually somebody that's looking forward. So I'm always looking at where I want to get to, not where I've come from. And I suppose other people have appreciated what I've done more than I have myself. For me, it's my day job. And so that's what I'm here to do. But that was a really, really particularly special time, because actually when I was invited to attend the lunch, which was lovely, and when I got a call from Woman of the Year, I was about 10 months pregnant. I was very, very pregnant. And I thought somebody was ringing me to find out my dietary requirements of being a guest. So when I got the phone call, I completely overwhelmed. I mean, I don't think there's any words that can describe it. And when the actual day of the awards came, I was there with my husband, a week old baby, riddled with hormones. And in fact, I can remember I had a C-section, but I was determined to wear heels. And so I remember sort of walking towards the stage thinking, am I going to make it?
Just to backtrack a minute, was your husband in the room or was he somewhere else? Because generally there are no men at the Women of the Year lunch.
There are not, but I had to bring my baby and because she was only a week old. So you had a room of about 500 women, one man and a baby. So you can imagine, you can imagine the attention they both got. And I can remember walking to stage and Lorraine Kelly was just, I passed her and she gave me this lovely hug. And I walked up onto the stage and I remember thinking, it is dangerous to invite a hormonally challenged woman onto a stage. I don't know if I can even remember what I said, but I was just so emotional. And the funny thing was, the room was quiet. And the minute I said something, I could hear this little baby in the background begin to cry.
Oh, no.
It was just... You know, so when you say, if I can remember, it was imprinted on my mind. It was just so very special for so many reasons.
That is definitely a memory that pretty much no other guest at the lunch will ever be able to share because I don't know if there have been any other men at the lunch. And certainly in all the time I've been involved in the organisation, there never has been. So you are a groundbreaker in many ways.
It was the most beautiful day. And I think for me personally, I just felt so validated. We all do what we do and we don't question it. I just felt so honoured and so validated. And it sort of felt like people around me were suddenly saying, actually, what you're doing is good. That's right. I don't think I could find other words to say.
Oh, that is the perfect summary of what we aim to do through Women of the Year, for all the women that we celebrate at every lunch. It's absolutely at the heart of everything we do is to recognise and celebrate the amazing achievements of women like you, Nina. It's been such an absolute delight to share your story again and to catch up with you about everything you've achieved since we gave you that award. Before we finish our chat, though, I have to ask you the four questions that we ask all our guests on The Extraordinary Ordinary. So are you seated comfortably? We're going to kick off with the first one, which is tell us who is or are the woman or women who have inspired you in your life.
I thought about this. And first of all, I have to say my mum, she passed away only a couple of months ago.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
You know, she was 91 and she sort of slipped away like a Jedi in about 2 minutes, which is amazing. She brought me up to believe that I could do anything, which wasn't helpful when I was a teenager because I'd come home saying, Mum, I've got to do this or I've got to do that. I need some help. And she'd go, you'll be fine. You'll be fine. But she always made me believe that I actually, A, I could do whatever I wanted to do in terms of, you know, career. You know, if you want to do it, you can do it. But I think everything in life, and I don't think I've really fully appreciated that until most probably the last few years when I realized just how precious that is.
Question number two, what advice would you give to your younger self, Nina?
Well, I thought my younger self might give me advice, actually. I think if I told her that I'd get married at 49 and have a child at 53, she might have covered her face in shock. But seriously, I think that the first thing I'd say to her is your bottom isn't nearly as big as you think it is. I think the second thing I'd say to her is that I feel like I spent a lot of my very young years always apologizing for talking too much. And, you know, I'd go out to a party or something and I felt like the next day I'd be telling everybody, I'm sorry if I talk too much. And I've realized that it's fine to have an opinion. And it's actually probably one of the reasons that I'm sitting here talking to you now is that I like talking.
Well, thank goodness for that. I wouldn't make much of a conversation between us if you didn't.
I think I would really want to say to her, there's a huge amount of pressure that's put on teenagers to sort of know what they want to do. And I think say, you're going to be many things. You're not going to be one thing. Life is an adventure and enjoy it. And I think that when it gets tough, I've learned that the universe always carries you to the right place and somehow delivers you where you need to be. So I would say, don't worry, just follow the journey and enjoy every bit of it.
Oh, that's great. Thank you. What fantastic advice. Question number three, what's one thing you can't live without?
Well, I asked my husband, what is the one thing? And then he said, your bum bag. And it's true. My bum bag goes everywhere with me.
What is in your bum bag, Nina?
Well, everything that I could possibly need. I'm sure it'd be the thing in a fire that I would grab and take. It has my cards, it has my keys, it has my lipstick and my glasses. And then any other little things that I pick up or need to put in there. But even if I take a bag, I take my bum bag and I put it inside the bag. I keep everything in there that I absolutely need. And I guess because I'm walking so much, it's just become part of my second nature. So they go in and out of fashion. So sometimes I'm incredibly in vogue and sometimes I'm incredibly out of fashion, but it would have to be my bum bag.
Well, that is good to know. We know now if we ever see Nina, she'll have her bum bag on her. And the last question of all, Nina, what's something about you that would surprise people to know?
I'm not sure. I'm a very open person, so I'm not sure that I hold too many surprises, but I absolutely love history and particularly archaeology. I think if I was born in another life, I would have loved to have worked at the V&A. You know, these programs that go inside the V&A. I am absolutely riveted to it, and I think that I would have loved to do that. I'd love to go on an archaeological dig.
Have you never done one?
No, not yet anyway.
Yeah. That's an adventure still to come.
Yeah. So I think that's probably something not many people know.
That's great. Thank you. Oh, Nina, it's been such a delight talking to you, really. You are an inspiration, and long may you continue to keep walking. Keep your bum bag with you, please, at all times. We'll be anxious about that now in case you leave it behind. And thank you so much for spending time talking to us today. And congratulations again for being one of our very special award winners at Women of the Year.
I've absolutely loved it. And I just feel very honoured. So thank you.
The Extraordinary Ordinary is brought to you in partnership with Coca-Cola Euro-Pacific Partners. CCEP is the world's largest independent bottler. In Great Britain, they make, move and sell soft drinks for every occasion and employ some 3,600 people across England, Scotland and Wales at manufacturing sites, offices and depots. At CCEP, their everyone's welcome philosophy means they're creating a modern company where everyone can grow, develop and belong. They make a positive difference in both their workplaces and their local communities, which is something they're extremely passionate about at CCEP. If you've enjoyed this episode of The Extraordinary Ordinary, which of course we really hope you have, please rate and review us. It helps people to find us. Thank you.